weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the Phil Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Friday, March 29th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, the League of Ireland is back. After the international break, Paul Corry and Fergal Brennan are standing by to chat football both at home and in the English Premier League. It's Gaelic football final weekend in Croke Park as the National Leagues draw to a close. Austin O'Malley will be previewing all of the action. Jane Mangan sets us up for a big weekend of Easter racing at Ferry House. And we'll hear from Ireland women's rugby head coach Scott Beamond as he names his team for Sunday showdown with Italy in the RDS. A packed hour ahead. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. WhatsApp 0871879200 or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to a Good Friday Game On. Austin O'Malley and Paul Corry are in studio. As I mentioned, lots to get through. Austin, we will be finishing the show with Gaelic football. So some might say we're leaving the best to last. Paul Corry, no offence intended. We will be starting with soccer. Gentlemen, listen, it's a huge weekend, bank holiday weekend of sport. So Austin O'Malley, what are you most looking forward to this weekend?
Look, Shane, I think just, you know, all my energy and interest, I think this week is probably in Croke Park, really. You know, when you look at sort of the National League coming to a crescendo, there's some quality games there spread out over Saturday and Sunday, and there's a lot of little subplots buried within them, and I think it'll give us a right good gauge in terms of where, you know, teams are at and how serious they're taking the competition, but all and obviously looking towards the summer as well, you know, just to see what the form lines are. You know, there's obviously National League coming to, what, over 220 games played already. But just looking through it there, like even the Dublin Derry one, you know, it's going to be a fascinating encounter the way both teams set up. And right down through into Division 4, I suppose you have the Leitrim story back in Croke Park just for the sixth time ever. Andy Morden and their bounce back ability from the defeat last year. So there's a lot on the table there, and I'm really, really looking forward. And I think on the balance of it, most of those games will be really, really tight affairs. So hopefully they'll all serve up for, you know, intriguing encounters.
Well, we'll be getting stuck into them in due course. Paul Corry, what is your sporting highlight? Or what do you expect it to be?
Well, there's some big games in the Premier League, but the energy you delivered that intro, the League of Ireland, it's very hard to stray away. You might not like what I'm about to say, and I think I've said it before and you didn't take too kindly to it. It's the biggest night in the League of Ireland calendar. Bowes Rovers, in Tala.
Contentious opening statement, no.
This is a huge fixture in general, but also in terms of how the league is standing at the moment. Alan Brennan's just gone into Bowes. Shamrock Rovers obviously got off to a bit of a slow start, but it's the one, I think, Shane, that Bowes and Rovers fans look out for, but I think also the neutral looks out for, and we hope that we're going to get a cracking game.
Just for context, Austin, because I know you're not an avid League of Ireland fan, biggest night, it's 6th against 7th.
That's good detail.
No, on a serious note, it's the biggest crowd in 33 years, I think, in a League of Ireland fixture. 10,000. It could have been more, I suspect, if Tala Stadium held more, which is absolutely brilliant to see. So it is going to be a great occasion. Tongue in cheek, my comment about 6 and 7, but no, it is it's a proper rivalry. New Bowes manager, proper baptism of fire, loads of narratives similar to the Gaelic football weekend in Croke Park, loads of narratives to get through, and we will be chatting all things football and Gaelic football in due course.
Game On
Rugby.
However, turning to rugby, Sam Monaghan will captain Ireland in this Sunday's Women's Six Nations meeting with Italy at the RDS live on Radio 1's Sunday Sport, with head coach Scott Beamon making four changes to his side from the opening defeat to France. Monaghan comes into the second row to partner Doherty Wall, having missed out on last week's defeat to the French due to concussion. The Meath native replaces Hannah O'Connor, who drops out of the matchday 23. Adele McMahon, who captained the side last week, is a surprise omission, with a flanker not included in the matchday squad. McMahon's spot in the back row is taken by Grace Moore, who joins Brittany Hogan and Aoife Wafer at the back of the scrum. The front row is unchanged. However, there are two changes in the back line, with Dana O'Brien getting the nod ahead of Nicole Fowley at out half, but O'Brien joined by Aveen Riley in the halfbacks. Munster's Enya Breen makes her return to the team into centre after missing the majority of last year's Six Nations with an arm injury. Aoife Dalton drops to the bench, with Eve Higgins joining Breen in midfield. The back three is unchanged, with Lauren Delaney continuing a full back in between wings, Baving Parsons and Kate Corrigan, with the latter set for her home debut. There is also one new face on the bench, as Emer Curry is included among the replacements. Ireland head coach Scott Beamon was speaking at the team announcement earlier today.
Now, part of coming in and where we wanted to get to is developing the competition within the group, the competition within the squad. there's the girls have been competing hard. So yes, there were some tough conversations. Yes, there were some high challenge, high support that we've put in place for girls. But they understand where the group is and where we need to be. And as we move towards professionalism, we'll pick strongest groups for game by game. So this is a selection for Italy. It definitely doesn't rule people out going forward. Yes, there was a couple of very tough discussions based on form as well. So we try not to look at it and go, oh, well, who did what, right or wrong? And then it's select in or out based on that. It's actually based around opportunity and the next game. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sam's a massive player for us, both in terms of leadership and the set piece, particularly the line out. We had to bring her back in at the right time. We had to get enough rugby, enough back into her for it not to just be quick in, quick out. So she's been working really hard on Sam. She's a massive part for us. And I think you can see the confidence in the girls from having her back involved in set piece and around the pitch. So the qualifying for the World Cup is a big piece. And our first chance to do it is by finishing third, presumably, depending on which results go which way. If you win three games, you can take that into your own hands. So it's an important part of it, but in terms of is it an absolute, look, our performances will do the talking for us. Our performances, we believe, will get us a win.
Don't forget you can watch Ireland versus Italy in the Women's Six Nations on Sunday from 2:30 on RT2 and the RT Player. Follow a live blog on the RT website and the RT News app. Or you can listen to live commentary on RTE Radio 1's Sunday Sport.
Game on.
Football.
Now, lots to get through. We're going to start with Association Football. We will be chatting Premier League and Fergal Brennan will be joining the conversation in due course. However, Paul Corrie, let us begin with a Dublin derby. Shamrock Rovers versus Bohemian Football Club. As I mentioned, 10,000. Biggest crowd in over 30 years. It is brilliant to see from a footballing point of view. However, Shamrock Rovers, many people's favourites for the league title, in seventh place, one win from five matches. Bohemians with a new manager, Alan Reynolds, proper baptism of fire. So, exploring those narratives, who needs a victory more out of this fixture?
Ooh, very good question. I would have said Shamrock Rovers, to be honest with you. I still think they're looking for that performance and that result to really kickstart their league campaign. I thought they were okay against Galway in different spells. I thought the pitch was quite difficult to play on and maybe showed a little bit of the inconsistency that we've seen in some of their performances already this season. So I just feel like people are waiting for Shamrock Rovers to come to the fore and they're waiting for that big performance, and this could be the situation. This could be the night against Bowes live in the telly with that massive bumper crowd to maybe put that together. Because what you don't want to do from a Shamrock Rovers point of view is give the likes of Shelburne and Derry any more of a gap than they've already given them today. And so many people are talking about Shamrock Rovers going on and winning five in a row, and the expectation is that that will happen. But they still can't afford to let the likes of Shells and Derry to get too far ahead, and I just feel that they need that performance. I think they've been slow out of the block, Shane. I've said it once or twice, I think without Farouja's pace and legs and wide areas out of the team, I've thought they've looked a bit predictable in some of their build up play, and they haven't had that same sort of fluency or threat that they posed in previous seasons. So for that reason, I'd say Shamrock Rovers, but on the flip side of that, Alan Reynolds is also going to want to get on to a good start.
Is Alan Reynolds the right man to galvanise Bowes?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because if you look at his managerial career, the majority of positions that he's had has been as a number two. He obviously had that spell at Waterford, working with Pat Fennin, who was there at the time as well. So they obviously know each other very well and they have a good relationship. And it seems like he turned down the job previous time out. So I think Alan Reynolds will go in knowing what it is he has at his disposal from a playing perspective, but I think he'll also have a nice security in the relationship that he has with Pat Fennell, and I think maybe the combination of the two might be enough to just get them going again, because the tail end of last season, the start of this season, has been a bit slow. They've certainly got players that they can work with and that can improve on their performances to date. Whether or not he's going to be the correct man over the longer term is probably, we're going to have to wait and see how they get on. But I certainly think, as somebody who knows what that club is about, who knows what the league is about in terms of how to get results, he's probably a very good fit.
What he lacks in first team management experience, he probably makes up in the coaching aspect, and perhaps that's what Bowes need, is a hands-on coach to drill into them a style of play and a winning style of play.
Yeah, because that's been lacking from a number of their performances early this season, and like I mentioned, Taylor last year, whereby it was a bit difficult to know what it is they were trying to do. It didn't seem like they were, you know, defensively brilliantly set up, or that they were playing this unbelievable expansive play. I think Jonathan Afolabi's goals got them out of jail a number of times last year, and the fans, you could almost feel the unease in the stadium over the last 6 to 12 months, and maybe it's just getting somebody like Adam Reynolds, who's going to bring a bit more of identity, like you mentioned, to their play and give them a bit of a system to play within, and maybe that will bring about better results and performances. Because if you look at the squad, I know they've lost a number of players, you know, particularly to the UK over the last number of years, but if you look down through the spine of the team, it's still quite strong. They've been lucky with injuries to Cornwall and to Buckley, and I felt really sorry for Declan Devine that he lost those two key players, because they embody everything that Bows fans like about their performance. There's, you know, real honesty about their play, and to lose those two players was massive. But if you still look at the guts of the squad, they should be competing at the top end, at least in those top four places, and I'm sure that's what Alan Reynolds will be identifying and trying to get towards.
League leaders Shelburne host Dundalk and Tolka Park. Damien Duff in his midweek comments said, "It is brilliant to be back in action this weekend. The last 2 weeks has highlighted that the leading light of Irish football is not the national team, but the league itself. It is bigger, better, more exciting and more important. Every true Irish football fan has been waiting for this Friday, nothing else." What did you make of those comments?
It's hard to disagree with a lot of what he said there. Maybe being bigger and better, you could argue, because I still
subjective,
think...
Subjective.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the national team is still such a massive piece of the jigsaw when it comes to football in this country, and qualifying for major tournaments, I don't think, compares to a League of Ireland campaign. But at the same time, the demand is there. Mm. You know, people trying to get tickets to Dalyman, people trying to get tickets for Tala, Richmond Park. You could go all throughout the country, particularly at the beginning of this season, the demand is through the roof and people are crying out for live football, and the product has become a hell of a lot better over the last, let's say, 4 to 5 years. So it's very hard to argue what he has said there, and it's a rallying call. I'm sure he wants to continue and build on this momentum that he has started with, and it's a fixture tonight that I'm sure he's expecting to win. I mean, you're a Shells fan, Shane. You tell me. Surely, with the form that you've begun this season. Dundalk, I was looking at the fixtures. Dundalk haven't actually scored since the opening game of the season when they played against Shamrock Rovers. Really lacking confidence. Surely Shells go and win.
Nothing lasts forever.
November rain, huh?
does that break come at a bad time? You know,
yeah,
I know it's only
yeah,
a week, but
coming back from the this. Is going to be, I think, a huge night for Damien Duff Shelburne in terms of how they manage that international break, and because they work off that momentum and training and people working for Duff, that tonight they could slip up. But I wasn't aware of that fact about Dundalk not scoring. And on the flip side of a team that has a poor run of form, perhaps they need the break, they need to just reset and go again. You would imagine Shelburne will win, however, they never make it easy, and they kind of put it up to the bigger teams. You'd nearly almost fancy more against Derry on Easter Monday than you would.
I know it's what amazing. You mean. Dundalk are very unpredictable at the moment. I think there's a sense of the players maybe didn't fully understand the league, and I think maybe after the result against Shamrock Rovers in the opening night of the season, maybe there was a bit of complacency with some of those players, that maybe this standard is a little easier, and maybe they've been caught out in the last couple of games because their performances and results have been really worrying from Stevie O'Donnell's point of view. A real lack of threat going forward and conceding goals, not a good combination, not something that you would want to see from the dark side. And it's scary to think where they've fallen to, given where they were a couple of years ago. And I said to you when we were previewing this league, if they didn't get the recruitment right again this year, I thought they'd be struggling. And they are struggling. And he definitely needs a result to turn things around there, because Stevie has a good CV, did a great job at St. Pat's when he was there winning the cup, had a decent season at Dundalk, but things feel like they're in reverse there at the moment. And a result and 3 points would be very welcome for Stevie there. They play Drogheda then on Monday night, big loud derby. Two poor results could heap a huge amount of pressure on that squad.
The only team in the Premier Division without a win, Dundalk. So yeah, big night at Tolka Park. Elsewhere, Waterford hosts Sligo. Galway are away to Derry City. I perhaps tongue in cheek said nothing lasts forever, but for Waterford and Galway, they'll be hoping that their good start to the season in terms of two teams that were promoted does last forever.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, they've both been really strong since they've come up. I think this was the expectancy from the majority of people that follow the league, is that there was no whipping boys in UCD this year, and it's going to be very hard to tell maybe from 5th place down to 10th. And a lot of people would have had Waterford and Galway down there, and I was one of them. I think I said Waterford at the beginning of the season, but they've both shown that they're very well set up, particularly Galway. Anytime I've seen them, very dogged, very difficult to play against at those two banks of four. And Shamrock Rovers found that when they went there before the break, that just a very well drilled side, and something that you would always expect with Caulfield sides. Like you said, they've started well. It's about keeping the foot down on the pedal tonight, and whether, you know, Waterford could come through with 3 points against Sligo, that would be a massive result. And for Galway as well, if they could get anything from a game against Derry, that would be huge momentum to build on.
Particularly how well Sligo have gone, and not many people would have thought that they're third in the table. Finally, before we move on to Premier League football, Paul, Drogheda United host St Pat's at 9th against 8th, which is a... Well, perhaps some people might have suspected Drogheda might be down there, but it's a weird one looking at the league table, to be honest, in that regard. Who's going to come out on top at Weavers Park?
Yeah, another tricky fixture, and it goes back to, it's very hard to...
Which is good. It's good that we can predict matches.
It's brilliant, and it's brilliant from a spectator point of view. I would expect the Pats will come good at some point. I know there's been a lot of change there, and they lost key players at the end of last season. I still think they're trying to find a system with the players and the current crop of players that they have at the moment. Rory Keating, anytime I've watched him, seems to be extremely isolated. They can't seem to get legs or runners up alongside him, and feeding him chances has proved difficult. And he's actually shown in the goals that he scored, particularly the one against Derry up there, if you give him any sort of service or you feed him in dangerous areas, he will test keepers and he will get shots on target. And he put a wonderful goal past Brian Maher that night. And I still think they're just trying to find a recipe of how to get the most out of that team and how to get the most out of Rory Keating. I think that will come good. They went to Minnesota during that break. Maybe that might have served them well. They obviously had a good run out while they were there. I think Pats will win tonight, Shane.
Okay, in the first division, Bray host Cove. Athlone are on the road, the top of the table. Cork, it is Kerry and Wexford in Tralee. Longford, bottom of the first division, host UCD. And Tralee United, who've been getting some great crowds in Limerick, host Finn Harps. And don't forget, Rovers Bows is on the box. So that sold out match in Tallaght Stadium is live on RTE2 television. And that is a proper, proper rivalry. Moving on to Premier League football, welcoming Fergal Brennan into the conversation. And, you know, there's always a bit of bite in all these League of Ireland managers, or matches, I should say. And then I look at Manchester City and Arsenal and I see Mikel Arteta hailing Pep as the best coach in the world. Fergal, it's all just a big loving in England.
They love pretending to love each other. I think there's a huge amount of respect. This happens every time. It's either Klopp against Guardiola or Arteta against Guardiola, where the praise flies around, the compliments flies around. And you know, I think they do have an enormous amount of professional respect and understanding for each other, but they absolutely know that this is the sharp end of not just the season, this is the sharp end of top level Premier League football. I think particularly from Guardiola's perspective, he knows that last season when Arteta and Arsenal were squeezed just that bit in the final couple of months of the season, they came up short, and the players were very honest about it. I don't think there's been a sea change from Arsenal this season, but I think there's been a noticeable improvement in that sense. You have to be very careful and say that, you know, 9 months on, they're a completely different outfit mentally and tactically. They've improved significantly. But in those real fine margins, in those huge games, there's still a bit of work to be done. All the steps have been positive for Arsenal. They've beaten Liverpool recently. They obviously beat Man City in the reverse fixture earlier this season. But it all still rose towards this. And when you are Guardiola and when you're that Manchester City squad, you have so much confidence in your ability in these games that they'll be looking at this and thinking, it'll be difficult, but we're still Manchester City. So it is all set up to be really, really tight.
Arsenal could open up a 4-point gap over Manchester City with a win, Paul, with just 27 points left to fight for. So how big of a match is this in the context of the Premier League title race?
Oh, I think it's more important for Arsenal, Shane. I think Arsenal potentially need to go there and win. I think when you look at some of the games that they have left to play, and just if you combine some of the sticky moments they had last year, I think they're more likely to drop points than Manchester City. I think after this fixture, there's a huge possibility that Man City won't drop any more than maybe 2 or 3 points after today. So I think Arsenal need to go there and win. I think also when you throw into the fact that their form was so strong before the international break. I think if they can manage to kind of click back into gear, they were so good going forward before the break. They scored so many goals. I just wonder, has that international break maybe just hampered some of that momentum? They have a dreadful record at the Etihad. Haven't won there since 2015.
Oh, really?
Drawn 1, lost 8. So that will give you an idea of how difficult a task this has proved for Arsenal previously. And I would absolutely agree with what Fergal has mentioned there. I still think there's a couple of questions around Arsenal when we get to this stage of the season. They didn't get over the line last year. I thought they looked really nervy against Porto over those two legs. And if you think back to last year when Saliba got injured, the wheels fell off. So I just wonder, are there still a couple of cracks there that we might see with Arsenal? And maybe if they were to win a game like this, that would then just push them on a bit.
Fergal, a couple of big names are back for this clash, I'm right in saying?
Yeah, in terms of injuries for both sides, Guardiola and Arteta have been busy checking up on players over the international break. Absences for Man City, Kevin De Bruyne and Edison will be back, according to Guardiola's press conference today, but no John Stones and no Kyle Walker. Bukayo Saka and Gabriel Martinelli were the doubts for Arsenal, and Arteta effectively said he'll kind of leave it to the last minute, but he did hint that he would expect them to be ready. Obviously, Saka was pulled out of the England squad, so he hasn't played over the last week. I think for City, those two players are a big absence. Kyle Walker and John Stones are so important to how City's set up without the ball. And John Stones has been excellent this season. We've seen him kind of just stroll around the pitch and pop up in whatever position he fancies. And that's been a new gear that Man City have kind of created this season. But Kyle Walker's a big one. When I look at the game from earlier on in this season, and when Man City do play the big teams, when they play Liverpool or they play Madrid in the Champions League, he loves a one-on-one, whether it's Vinicius with Real Madrid or Luis Diaz with Liverpool. Gabriel Martinelli up against him looked to have been really, really important, but now that won't be the case. Guardiola will probably reshuffle. There's normally a bit of focus against the big teams he plays a back four. Against Liverpool a few weeks back, he went with a three, including Walker. I think, given the injuries and the absences, he might have to go with a three this time. And I think that is a situation that Arsenal will look at. If they can win the ball quickly in transition, particularly if Jorginho plays and Rice plays on the left of the midfield three, he's got that power to burst into that space. Kyle Walker's not there. And then you have Gabriel Martinelli to go on beyond that if he's fit enough to play. I think that will be something that Arsenal will be looking to push on. But then on the flip side, Man City have Haaland and Alvarez and De Bruyne and Foden and everyone else that if Arsenal don't watch themselves can really, really hurt them. I agree with Paul that Arsenal probably have to go and win. I think if they come away with a draw, it's not a disaster. But I think if they lose, all of those questions just restart. And so much of Arteta's good work over the last 9 months doesn't go in the bin. But the question mark goes from quite small to very big once again.
So that one kicks off at 4:30 on Sunday. Earlier on Sunday, Paul, 2 p.m, Liverpool-Brighton. Given the fact City are playing Arsenal, is this a must-win for Liverpool, Paul?
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll probably be saying that about a number of the fixtures that we have.
But even when you're talking about Arsenal's mentality, even to kind of put the pressure on them, if it's a couple of hours of a gap.
Yeah, I still think that makes a difference. So playing first in a situation like that where you can put a bit of pressure on both teams and you can put yourself psychologically back at the top of the table. I think for Liverpool in particular, off the back of the FA Cup disappointment, we'll be looking to now really focus in on the competitions that they're left in. And you would expect that they would go and beat Brighton at home. I think Brighton, particularly trying to juggle the European fixtures over the last couple of months, probably haven't hit the same sort of heights that they did last year. Maybe being difficult to sustain that sort of performance that they had last year under the Zerbi, but they don't really seem that they've had the same element of consistency to their play. And you would expect Liverpool going out there fully focused to get themselves back to the top of the league would go and win. That's not to say that it's going to be an easy fixture. If Brighton show up and play to their full potential, we've seen what they can do to the top teams within this league. But I just think there's an air of confidence about Liverpool at this moment in time, particularly when they play at home, that they can go on and they can win games even when they're not playing too well.
Yeah, Brighton not in great form at the moment in the league. Fergal, I read today Xabi Alonso is staying at Leverkusen. So does that make it an Anfield addition for Roberto De Zerbi?
Potentially, I think certainly in terms of the bookies switching around the odds, Alonso has dropped after his statement this afternoon saying that he fully intends to stay at Leverkusen for next season at least. So Roberto De Zerbi and the Sporting Lisbon manager Ruben Amorim, I think his name is the other name that's being mentioned. It's a very difficult guessing game to play. For me, Roberto De Zerbi, the last few months, even before Klopp's announcement, has been talking like a manager who sees himself out of the club next season. I think his perspective is he's not been able to build what Brighton did last year. He knows that some of his big players could well be leaving this summer. There'll certainly be bids that will be coming in for a few of them. And he knows that ultimately he feels that maybe he can't really take them much further. They might sneak Europa Conference League. But realistically, he knows that that's the ceiling. And he does seem to be a manager that does get itchy feet in situations if he smells a different opportunity or he decides that he wants to move on. I don't really know, particularly with amongst Liverpool fans that I've spoken to, that the appetite to get him is that strong, particularly based on this season. I think if we kind of rewound 12 months, then it'd be a different point. He was doing fantastically well with Brighton. He was the kind of hot young thing in the Premier League and everyone was looking at him and thinking, is he going to be the next manager to take over X, Y or Z? I think that's changed this season. And I also think so many Liverpool fans were just zooming in on Alonso that now it's very difficult to look at Amorim or De Zerbi or whoever might come into the frame and not see them as second or third choice. But just quickly, in terms of Alonso, before we move on, I think it is quite a sensible choice from him. There's obviously frustration from Liverpool fans who kind of see it as these jobs don't come up every season. You might not get this opportunity again, but I just think his stock is so high and it's so difficult to underestimate how brilliantly he's doing. Leverkusen are going to win their first ever Bundesliga title. They possibly might win the German Cup. They could well meet Liverpool in the final of the Europa League. He's doing a fantastic job and his stock is sky high. He's the one with the power to decide if he stays, when he goes, where he goes. And this is a very sensible decision. I know we all like to kind of gossip about who's going where, but this is a very sensible decision made by a very sensible coach.
Do you know when you were talking about the Liverpool vacancy there?
Yeah.
I was just expecting her Lee Carsley's name. So
I'm banning it, lads. I'm banning it. We have a minute left in our football chat. We're not, no more speculation over managers and Game On for the foreseeable future.
Fair enough.
Final word to you, Paul. I feel like we're working our way back. Manchester United, Brentford, just briefly, Paul, can United Cup dramatics inspire a big league finish?
Potentially, and you feel like for Ten Hag, between now and the end of the season, a lot of these fixtures are maybe going to measure or be a measure on where he sees himself at the end of the season, whether or not he continues in that Manchester United job. Top five is looking like it potentially could be that Champions League spot, so they have to go hard after Tottenham. And this is certainly an opportunity to close the gap between the two sides. Brentford have probably got a bit more of a cushion there with that points deduction to Forest, that maybe you're looking at the final relegation spot being a straight shootout between Luton and Forest, and maybe that gives them a bit of breathing room, but they're not safe yet. And I always feel with teams like that, with there's 10 games to go, they need points on the board. They're really grafting and going hard after teams. It could be a difficult fixture, but it's one if Manchester United is to be taken seriously and if people are to really believe the momentum behind that FA Cup game, you have to go to Brentford and win. But there's been false starts with this Manchester United team before, so very difficult to call just with how inconsistent they've been.
Yeah, nothing lasts forever. Elsewhere in the Premier League, the afternoon kickoff on Saturday, Newcastle, West Ham, 3 p.m. kickoff, Spurs, Luton, Chelsea, Burnley, Forest, Palace, Sheffield United, Fulham, Bournemouth, Everton. Very good, Brendan. Thank you very much. Paul Corry, thank you very much. I assume you're going to Tala.
I am indeed.
Enjoy it. Safe travels. Enjoy the match. Austin O'Malley is still here. We're chatting Gaelic football soon. But up next, Jane Mangan is going to be previewing the Easter Festival at Fairy House.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, the Fairy House Easter Festival is upon us. You can watch live racing on Sunday from 2:30 on RTE1 and on Monday from 2:30 on RTE2 with Jane Mangan, Ruby Walsh and all of the gang. And I'm pleased to say Jane joins us on the line now. Jane, as I mentioned, it's a big weekend of racing ahead. So let us begin our conversation on Sunday at Fairy House, because declarations are in. The first Grade 1 of the day is at 2:35. The Grade 1 Honeysuckle Mares Novice Hurdle. So Jane Mangan, what catches your eye?
Well, what catches my eye is that there's 18 runners, and before we start, really appreciate that, bloke Shane. You know, the weather's cat. Stay in, guys. Watch us on RT1 and 2. We'd love to have you. And yes, the racing is good. Look, any bank holiday weekend, there tends to be a lot of sport on, and this card looks like it's top drawer from Fairy House. 10 runners for William Mullins in the 18-runner race. A lot of people will look immediately at that, but there's so much more depth than just that. Jade Grugy suffered a little bit of interference at Cheltenham. Is it, the question mark, is it too close to Cheltenham? We're only 2 weeks since then to turn her around and run her here. Champion trainer thinks it's doable, and Paul Townend has picked her of the 10 from the yard. But she's going to come up against like Jatara, Jessica Harrington, after that good run of the Dublin Racing Festival, pinpointed this race and decided to sidestep the Cheltenham Festival to come here fresh. She's going to be hard to beat. Henry de Bromhead is... quartet. He's four of them representing him here. Of course, the race is named after his 2019 winner, the mare that went on to be one of the greatest of all time, Honeysuckle. He's got Theatre Native, he's got Pastoral, and he's got Look to the West, who I think could be a nice each way shout at big odds, because she will relish the conditions. And you know, Shane, it hasn't stopped raining since around September, so it's going to be pretty tough going.
Just briefly, and excuse my ignorance, is this an unusually big field for a Grade 1 domestically?
Definitely, it definitely is. But the factor is probably that a lot of these are unexposed and they're just trying their hand at this type of a race, because it's extremely valuable. It's obviously got Grade 1 status, and they only qualify to run in it for 1 year because it's a novice. Okay. So all the fillies are kind of coming in together, and it'll make it ultra competitive. I'm not saying that there's going to be 10 of them come down to the last upsides, but for people who are looking for each way value, it'll certainly create that.
Okay, okay. Later that day, 5 to 5, we have the Willow Warm Gold Cup. Another Grade 1, Jane.
Yes, 7 runners declared here, so no each way betting for people. And this is a race obviously close to home for me, because my dad has one of the protagonists in the race called Spillane's Tower. He's definitely the best horse we've had here in the yard for the best part of 15 years. It's 16 years since Dad won the race with a horse called Connor Castle. And this guy, he looks pretty good. He's met Blood Destiny twice. They're one apiece. We beat him in Punchestown over 2.5. Blood Destiny beat us over 2 miles when we dropped back and trip. And Blood Destiny seems to be a horse that's relaxing an awful lot better now that he's getting a little bit more mature and getting more experience. He's rated £7 superior to us, so he is the horse to beat in the race. San Felician and Zana here represent the Gordon Elliott stable. But I think we have a good each-way chance. Well, not each-way chance. I think we have a good chance of running a very nice race with Spillane's Tower, and Mark Walsh will ride him for Dad. So, you know, it could be a big weekend in the house.
Well, very, very best of luck with that. A couple of Grade 2 races on Sunday's card as well. Anything of note?
Yeah, there's a race that Nick Rockett won last year. Nick Rockett, we'll get on to him in a minute because he'll be one of the protagonists for the Irish National on Monday. But I like a horse called No Flies on Him for Edward O'Grady in the Paddy Keogh Ceilings novice third, the Grade 2 over 2.5 miles. He looked like a really nice horse when he won at Leopardstown. And again, I like the fact that they've skipped the Cheltenham Festival, come here fresh. I think No Flies on Him can run a very nice race there. And it could be a good day, hopefully, for JP McManus, because he owns No Flies on Him, he owns Spillane's Tower, and he also owns Mirrors Your West, who I think is quite a good horse. If he manages to switch off and settle, he's got a good chance in the Donoghue Marquis at the 2 mile hurdle at 3:45. But all of that will be live on our coverage, so do sit back and enjoy.
Yes, live coverage on RT1 on Monday. Switch over to RT2 from 2:30. And as you mentioned, the big one on Monday is, of course, the Irish Grand National. We don't have declarations as of yet, but there are some big names at the top of the market.
Yes, definitely. Nick Rockett is your current favourite. 7-year-old, he's a novice, he's unexposed, he looks like he'll stay, ticks a lot of boxes. And again, he was in the National Hunt Chase betting for Cheltenham, didn't go there, comes here. In intense raffles is a great chance for Tom Gibney. It would be a huge win for Tom Gibney, of course, who won it a couple of years ago. Arthur Dark represents two, I think, significant chances for Gavin Cromwell. He's got Arthur Dark and he's got Yaman. Yaman is a horse that's won twice this year in, or he's won in Haydock last time, getting a £7 penalty. But before that, he was unlucky not to win at Ascot. And I think he loved the real attritional conditions. Any second now, the 12-year-old represents Ted Walsh. Desert Moorhouse, the Kerry National winner for Martin Braslew, of course, won this race for number six Valverde. It doesn't look like it's likely to fill, which is a little bit disappointing for a race of its value, €270,000 to the winner. But in saying that, it does look like it's well up to standard. And look, we don't have declarations yet, so I can't tell you what field size we have. But we're only 26 left in the lineup. It looks like we're not going to have a maximum field.
Oh, okay. There is racing in Ferry House on Saturday and indeed in Cork over the weekend. However, Jane, let us finish our conversation a bit further afield because there is Irish interest in Dubai.
There is. So the flat racing season is well up and running. You know, some people love it, some people hate it, but I must commend Adrian Murray and David Egan teamed up for a very good winner at Newcastle today. So the Irish flag has already been flown across the water, but a little bit further away from home, Dubai World Cup Carnival. This is the pinnacle of their Middle Eastern racing carnival that is happening tomorrow. And Ireland is well represented across there. So with Maidan, the 4 o'clock race tomorrow, the mile and a half, Dubai Shima Classic is worth over €3 million. And Auguste Rodin for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore is currently the favourite. Of course, he won the Irish Champion Stakes last year. He won the Irish and Epsom Derby last year. He was the top three-year-old. It's great to see him back. Let's see what he can do his first run of the season. He's going to have to be well up to scratch, though, because he's going to have to overcome John and Thady Gosden's Emily Upjohn, who we all know is a top-class mare. Liberty Island, the four-year-old filly coming from Japan. Stars on Earth, also from Japan. Junko, coming from Andre Farb's quarters. And, of course, Spirit Dancer, the horse that gave Sir Alex Ferguson such a great win in Saudi Arabia last time. He lines up here again against Auguste Rodin. A little bit earlier on that card, a 3.10 over 9 furlongs is the Dubai Turf. A Lord Norse is going for an amazing fourth win in the race. Frankie Dettori flying in from America to ride him for John and Thady Gosden. The current favourite is from Japan, that's Joe Deuce. But from an Irish perspective, we'll be interested to see how Luxembourg gets on. Of course, himself an Irish Champion Stakes winner, but also a high-class 10-furlong horse. He was disappointing for me in Saudi Arabia last time. Hopefully he can step up his game. But I think Nashua is in there. A lot of people will look at her price. She's 10-1. Why is Nashua 10-1? Well, she's currently drawn 16 of 16, which is a huge disadvantage at that track because you're running straight into a bend. So they're two of the main races on the card. But of course, the main race is the Dubai World Cup. That's happening at 4:35 tomorrow. It's worth over 5.5 million sterling. And of course, you guessed it, the top two in the betting come from Japan. The third horse comes from the US, as does Bob Baffert's Newgate, who I fancy for Frankie Dettori. But huge racing across the water. Let's hope we can bring some of that money home.
Here's hoping. Jane Mangan, thank you very much. As I mentioned, RT1 on Sunday, RT2 on Monday from 2:30. Jane, Ruby and all of the gang live Easter Festival Racing from Ferry House. We're taking a short break and then Austin O'Malley is still here. We have a big weekend of Gaelic Football League Finals to preview.
Game on.
Gaelic Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to this evening's Game On. Austin O'Malley is here to chat Gaelic football. Austin, we are going to preview 4 league finals. Is it a good thing that we have league finals to preview?
Great opening question. Yeah, no, listen, it's obviously got a lot of oxygen over the last number of weeks and, you know, there's a kind of a split opinion on it. And you can understand both, I suppose, quarters. In some sense, it should be a direct race to the top and there's a cup handed out and it kind of takes you away from maybe sort of some dead rubber games, etc. and that. But, you know, just looking across, you know, the different things this week and even listening to the likes of Andy Morden and the guys in Division 3 and how important it is for them, you know, to get to, you know, the National Stadium, Croke Park,
yeah,
to bring their crowd with them and all of that, and how important that is for players from obviously the lower divisions that may not get access or may not get an opportunity to ply their trade, you know, in your National Stadium, iconic, and have that experience. You can understand why the top tier teams, obviously out of Division 1, you know, when you look at it, that are so used to going there and you know, ply their trade, as we said, you know like regularly there, you can see why it's not such a big thing. But I think on the balance of it, I think you know, they are, it is a worthwhile competition. It is maybe nice to cap it off. It gives teams an extra really competitive game in a stadium that's different, obviously, to others, and it plays out there. But like, I'm really looking forward to the four of them, and I think they're going to be four cracking games. So for the spectator, I think it does give you an extra, an extra game to look at and to run the rule over teams. But I suppose the problem is just that, you know, how that bit of a bottleneck at the end for teams in the turnaround, and it's only a week, and that's where it's causing a bit of congestion and it's seriously impacting on players maybe and their preparation levels going into the first round of a championship, which is the blue ribbon of Inter.
Yeah, it's always good to get silverware, though, as you mentioned there. And then looking at Division 1, for instance, and we will get into the Division 3 and 4, and perhaps it might mean a bit more to those counties. People might have that perspective. But is a league win more important to Derry than Dublin in terms of where they are on their respective journeys to the summer?
Yeah, no, look, I think it really is. In terms of the Derry trajectory, like, if you just cast your mind back, like, 5 years ago, they were playing their trade in Division 4, you know, so they've built incrementally through. And, like, Brendan Rodgers came out during the week, like, and, you know, you could just see from him in terms of, like, they set their stall out at the start of the year, definitely, in terms of reaching a National League final and going on, and they're obviously looking to win it. And, you know, they signalled that intent early when they played Derry, or when they played Kerry, yeah, down in Tralee, when they brought a full stack with them, the Glynn boys returning and all of that. So it really is important to them, I think, in terms of their trajectory and where they are. And I think they need to come to Croke Park, and I think they need to win a big game. You know, they were marginally beaten by Kerry last year. It was the game was in the balance, and they fluffed a few chances late in that game. And I just thought, you know, they've still a little bit of learning to do to be able to close out big games. And I thought there was a slight signal of that even against Dublin again in the league game up in Derry, even though they were a little bit under strength. There was an opportunities there at the end of that Dublin game where I just thought they're still not there, even though as good as they are, there was opportunities that they got, scoring opportunities that were fluffed again. So I think Derry need a big performance in Croke Park, and they need all their big guns coming strong. And like, they're going to get a serious test when you look at the form Dublin are in at the moment and how prolific they are. Dublin have hit 11 goals and 121 points over the course of the league, like, and it's just, you know, they've been so crisp and clean and efficient in what they've been doing in the last five games. So they're going to get a massive test, but it'll be a really, really intriguing battle, I think, across the 70 minutes.
What is going to be the most intriguing battle? What's going to be the decisive factor in the outcome?
I think the difference point for me in it, and looking through it and trying to study it up, and you're looking at it with your coach and hat, like, Derry's game is all based on, you know, their defence into attack and transition. If you look at their, out of what they've hit this season, I think they've hit 13 goals and 99 points. 6-10 of that out of 1274 from play, 6-10 of that have come from their defence. You know, and when you look at it, the amount of goals they've got from coming from back to front really, really quickly, the likes of McCluskey coming in with three and that, a lot of their play, and I think that's, for me, the weekend will be very interesting in terms of the way Dublin go about shutting that down, slowing that Derry attack down, because obviously Derry will come, they'll sit numbers in, they'll look to strip the ball of you, and then they transition really, really quick with width and numbers off the shoulder, and that's the way they're getting in behind teams, and they've cut teams apart over the National League. So that for me will be that if Dublin plug that, I think Dublin will win the game, because Dublin are quite efficient and economic up front, and I suppose we've spoken prior of maybe the over-reliance on Shane McGuigan. If he is shut down, can others step up? But they have, as I've alluded to, they've got 6-10 from what you would class as defensive players in that. So putting all that into the pot, I still think Dublin probably will have enough. Dublin have so much in their DNA in terms of, you know, big problem solvers in terms of players and being able to figure things out real time, and you can see how they dismantled Derry above and Derry, even though Derry weren't at their full strength, they still had enough on the pitch, I thought, to pose more problems to Dublin than they did. And you know, and just looking at both teams, I suppose there's another little caveat in there in terms of the depth that Dublin have developed during that National League. You know, it's nearly on a par with where it was in their, you know, under Jim Gavin. They now have 5, 6, 7 guys that can live and live at those levels.
And only Dean Rock stepped away as well.
And only Dean Rock.
It's mad that there hasn't been more people, so it just shows the drive among the group. Division 2, so many narratives. McGuinness, McGeaney, opposite side of the Ulster draw, so perhaps we can disregard any shadow boxing notion. Will this be an all guns blazing battle?
I think it will, and I hope it will, because even though when they played in the league it was probably a bit of a slow burn, and there was a little, it did feel like there was a little bit of shadow boxing that day, even though it got quite spicy on the line between
unsurprisingly
yeah, two great characters, like, and two absolutely ferocious competitors when you think about in terms of their own trajectory and their management careers and what they were as players. They've certainly brought that through into their managerial careers, and so I do think it'll be a full-blooded affair, and both of them are ideally placed. They've had two brilliant league campaigns in terms of the way that they've gone through the division. Looking at Armagh, they had kept clean sheet right up to the last game there. They only conceded two against Cork, so I'm sure Jim McGuinness will be rolling over the tape of the Cork game and looking at how they actually got in and breached that Armagh defence. For me, looking at Armagh over the league, I think they're one of the most improved teams per se, with the way they have evolved their game and the way that they're obviously very solid defensively. Their transition has quickened up a lot more, and they have a greater variety and a slickness in their attack as well. And they're playing a beautiful, sort of more expansive kicking game. We had probably, targeted them over the last couple of seasons of around, have they really established an identity? What is their game about? But I think this year they really have. They've played some fantastic football. They've young guys like, Mernon, Stephen Campbell really up and at it, Conor Turbutt, Rian O'Neill back in the flow. So to me, that they're one of the most improved teams, and I would slightly fancy them, hinging on the fact that Donegal are now without Paddy McBrearty, who is a huge, huge piece of the Donegal jigsaw in terms of being their, their key talisman up front. And there's concerns around Ryan McHugh as well, obviously, after that last league game as well. So if they're without those two, I think Armagh will shade it on the balance of what they have and the way they're playing.
You mentioned Armagh have found an identity. Is it fair to say Donegal and Jim are still building or rebuilding in Jim 2.0, whereas Armagh, they need something now. They need silverware to show their progress.
I think they do. I think they do in terms of where they have, contesting kind of All-Ireland semi-finals, and, they've been quite unlucky over the last couple of years, and we've gone back again saying that we probably thought there was a lot more in them. They just have a fluency now, and I think that, Kieran McGeaney, he's in situ quite a number of years there. A piece of silverware would just really consolidate that group, and I think that would give them huge confidence there. And, I think, looking through it as well, I think Kieran Donaghy is obviously part of that backroom team, and I think his imprint and I think what he's doing there now is coming through in the wash again. There's just signals of some of that forward play and the movement and how guys are moving off each other. I think that's coming through in the wash as well. So I think they're well placed, and I think, they have found a little bit through the league, whereas Donegal are still building, obviously. Jim, as you said, you rightly alluded, 2.0, I still think there's a lot more in them, and he's tweaking and he's but still, like, when you look at Donegal, I think they're a team full of, athleticism. They have finishers, the Oisin Gallen, the Michael Langans, the Kieran Thompsons. So they have an awful lot about them as well. But I think there's just a little bit more to go on them before championship.
Division 3 could mean a lot. Provincial championships will have a say in terms of championship placings for Westmeath. A lot of narratives here. Down will be disappointed with Tailteann Cup final, back in Croke Park and everything else. So who's going to come out on top of what is probably going to be a tightly, fiercely contested
I think it will be.
It's not going to be a landslide victory,
I'm
alluding to.
I don't think so. And given their league form as well, both of them have played a lot of really good football. For me, Down have been probably standout in terms of the way they've gone about their business. I think losing that Tailteann Cup final last year, they've really rebounded. The soundings that came out of Down really was that they've had a ferocious pre-season in terms of what they've, Conor O'Laverty's put up to them. And it has really galvanised them. And they have been running teams, like, they literally ran over Clare in the last 15-20 minutes of that game last weekend. They finished that game really, really strong. That was on the back of, obviously, they played Westmeath the previous weekend, where they could have had secured their promotion and didn't, and looked a little bit nervy and tentative in that game. So, like, for me, on the balance of power, looking at it, I think Down will come to Croke Park. I think the wide open spaces and the expanses of Croke Park will suit them. I think they're going to edge it. Like, they have been scoring freely up to it. I think, looking through their statistics, they've ran in 14 goals and, is it 103 points so far? So they're full of running. They play a very, very high press game. They look to really shut you down up top, and they'd like to close out the back as well. And they have a lot of quality players there. who have been getting in, like Pat Heveran, Daniel Guinness, these guys, Liam Kernan, like they're all really up and at it. So he's getting a great tune out of them. And they're a team that are on the rise.
Listen, we're running out of road, but we do have to mention Division 4, Laois versus Leitrim. How will this one play out?
Look, you know, everything inside me, you know, you love the underdog. You'd love to see Leitrim get across the line. Andy Morden, you know, the job he has done there in terms of turning things around from, which must have been the hangover of all hangovers, losing to New York last year. I don't think there's enough of sulfidine in the shot that could cure that, but by God, has he got a tune out of them this year. He's got them back up and running. You know, they were fortuitous, obviously, to get that late goal against Wexford early on, which obviously, in the heel of the hunt, was the difference in getting them up. So I think, though, on the balance of it, that again, if we're talking about the differentiators and the difference points, I think Laois have been just at a level higher this year. And I think a lot of it will fall onto Laois's forward play. When you look at it, the way they're stacked up there, and again, we're talking about the width of Croke Park and the expanses of it. When you look at Paul Kingston, Evan O'Carroll, Owen Lowry, Mark Brennan, they're in really, really good form. And I think Leitrim will struggle to hold them. And I think that they will have just enough to get Justin McNulty's team across the line in his second coming.
Okay, great stuff. Austin O'Malley, thank you very much. Enjoy the weekend of football in Croke Park. Massive thanks to Ronan Lawler and Doc Martin for working on this evening's show. The official chat show with Blatt and Tracy is up next, so do stay tuned to 2FM. Have a great Easter weekend. Game On will be back. Bank Holiday Game On from 6 o'clock on Monday. I'll chat you then. As I said, stay safe over the weekend. From all of Game On, it is bye-bye. 2FM.